to The University Life, another podcast. Today we are discussing Beauty and the Beast. We're taking literature and seeing what we can learn from it and see if these things that were written back in the 1700s still have any application to us today. I'm your host, Sean Roundy, and today we have our guest, Laurie Jones. Thanks for joining us, Laurie.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So first we're going to listen to someone recount a portion of the time of Beauty and the Beast, of the story, and then we'll talk about the good insights we can have from it. Here's 9-year-old Sarah Barksdale to tell us the story.
Once upon a time, there was a prince who lived in a beautiful castle. One day, an ugly woman came and asked for shelter. He said, "No way, go away." And she's like, "That guy's a jerk. Maybe I should do something to him." So she turns back into a fairy and says, "You will be a beast for as long as you may live, until a beautiful maiden comes and loves you despite your ugliness."
That sounds like a tall order. It's hard enough to find someone willing to marry you without that. So when I think of a modern application for a part of that story, the first thing that just leaps to mind is highway driving.
Yeah.
Have you ever been, maybe you're in the middle lane, as a lot of people love to the middle lane, and suddenly you realize you need this exit. So you look over your blind spot to the right and you turn on your blinker, and instead of making room for you so you can merge and get your exit, the cars speed up because they don't want anybody cutting in front of them.
And say, "Ah, curses."
Yeah. How fun would it be to be that fairy and just turn them into a hideous beast until someone waves and smiles at them for being a courteous driver?
I think that would change a lot for Utah driving, especially Utah.
Are you saying there would be a lot of hideous people behind the wheel?
Yes, actually, yes. I say I'm not a perfect driver, so I might, you know, turn me into a beast.
It's true. There's no such thing as a perfect driver. As I heard someone quote once, anyone who drives faster than you is crazy, and anyone who drives slower is an idiot. So
yeah,
there's really no way to judge that in most cases.
But yes, truly, if you had the ability to bless or curse, I think there would definitely be some changes in traffic. But
yeah. Fortunately or unfortunately, our world is more complex like that. Karma doesn't act quite so quickly, and we get to make the most of it.
Right. Right.
Let's hear the next part of the story now.
And so he did. He lived like a beast, like ugly, for the rest of his life, until one day there was a merchant, and he was going on a trip. And he had 3 daughters, and he said, "Daughters, what do you want me to bring back for you?" His 2 daughters said, "I want jewels, I want rings, I want rubies." And then his youngest daughter, Belle, said, "I want the most finest rose." And he said, "Okay." So he went, and it was raining and pouring down, and he finds a castle. And he goes into the castle, and there's food waiting for him. So he eats the food and goes to bed. And the next morning, he sees a rose garden. And he used to be rich, but because all the ships got lost in the storm, but one came back, they sold that ship to pay his debts. And he says, "Well, I can't bring my daughters back the jewels, but I can still bring Belle back the rose." And so he picked the rose, and the beast comes out. And he says, "You are stealing from me after all I've done to you. I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I just want to pick this for my daughter." And he says, "Fine. Go and give that to your daughter, and then return, and you will never go back." And he gave the jewels for his other daughters as well. So he goes back to the house, his house, and his daughter's like, "Daddy, something's wrong." And so he says, "There is something wrong. I have to leave." And she says, "Let me take your place." And so he says, "Very well."
I'm having a little more trouble on this one finding a parallel. Like, can you think of a good example of something a parent might do and the children end up paying the price for it?
That's a good question. Something that comes to mind is, I believe it's called language. I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, the example would be is, say, parents from a foreign country who have not yet quite learned the language move here. And
Language brokering,
yes.
Where the kids translate for the parents.
Yes.
And they have to act like the parent.
Pretty much, yes.
Kind of thing.
Yes.
Take on way more responsibility than a child normally should.
Right. And it is quite a great deal of responsibility. And I myself have kind of actually been experienced in that. Both of my parents are hearing impaired. And I'm the oldest child. And growing up, at a very young age, I've had to interpret for my parents for adult matters. And uh-huh. As a young child, I didn't understand what was going on. And so it was very frustrating and very overwhelming to me, often playing a parent role for my parents.
Uh-huh.
So it's very stressful. Now, granted, my parents are hearing impaired they know English, but it may not quite fit as quite closely as some immigrant families.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is definitely a parallel to that. I know what the children are going through. I've worked at a clinic where I've seen the child's interpreting for the parents, and my heart aches for them.
Really? You know, I just realized that I kind of can identify with that. A couple years ago, I went down to Mexico with my dad and a brother, and we climbed a big mountain there. And they both speak Spanish quite well, but mm-hmm. I speak much better. And they would always be, well, at least my dad would always be asking me to translate and bargain with the taxi drivers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now I get it. It got a little tiring to be the one, the go-between all the time.
That's right. And sometimes even actually making the decisions. And in my case, when I was a young child, I wasn't in a good position, because when you're translating, you've got to understand and then interpret. And that's totally different. And so it's been a kind of a consequence for me growing up, and it's affected me, I feel like, in long term.
How so? Because now, obviously, I mean, I know sometimes when you're with your mother, you help interpret, but you're mostly on your own. So how does that apply now that you've grown up?
Not only I became more responsible at a younger age, but now I have recognized, recently actually, I've learned that I take on other people's responsibilities that is theirs to have. And I do it pretty well. And I do it so well that I actually hinder more than help the person. I want to be helpful. I want to be a friend, and but I'm actually hindering more than helping.
How do they respond to it? Do they appreciate your help or resent it or what?
For most people, you know, they're like, sure, yeah, you could do that. But I do every once in a while kind of sense that little puzzling.
Like, why are you taking over my life?
In a sense.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm not taking over their life.
That little one aspect.
That little thing, yeah. I'm like, oh, well, let me take care of that for you. Yeah.
So when you say you're hindering them, is it like you're enabling them to be irresponsible?
In a sense, yes.
In a sense.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's kind of, wow, I feel very vulnerable right now. But I'm grateful.
Hey, that's as confessions go, that's a small one. Oh, you're too helpful. What a terrible person you are. If you're interested in maybe like making me dinner or something like that, I wouldn't mind experiencing how this feels. Just so you know, if you ever have the impulse, don't stifle it.
Okay. Good to know.
You know, the one thing I noted that seems to me very different in your case than in the Beauty and the Beast example with the rose
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, he stole something. It was just a flower, but he kind of made a mistake or committed a small crime. Your parents didn't, but you still ended up having to deal with the consequences as the child. And that made me think of so many other situations where children pay for the errors of their parents. Think of abuse, think of racism, think of attitudes and cultures that get passed down from parent to child over and over again. And it's not fair that the child has to deal with that. And they have to be the one to make the change. But life isn't fair. This is the only way it can happen, right?
Right.
We adults have to, you know, once we grow up, maybe it's our parents' fault that we're the way we are. But that becomes irrelevant because now you're you, and what are you going to do about it?
That's right. Just kind of a side note about the racism. As a result, I was raised with the assistance of my grandparents. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that my grandmother was a little bit racist. Granted, you know, she was World War II era.
A product of her culture.
Exactly.
As we all are.
And so I've noticed that kind of applied a little bit to my life. And now that I've been living with a roommate of mine who is foreign, she's very much more open and accepting. And I have learned with her to be more open and accepting. I didn't realize that I was a little more narrow-minded before I lived with her. And so it's been... About racism a little bit. And I didn't realize that. It was kind of a shock to me.
So your beliefs, your perceptions had never been challenged until this. And now faced with that challenge, what have you done?
I feel like I can interact with others much easier. And I can joke, I can tease with them a little bit. Mm-hmm. A lot easier than I used to be able to. And people are wonderful people. There are some marvelous people out there. And it's sad, and I'm saddened to think that I at one time may not have associated with them.
Yeah.
Almost subconsciously.
Yeah. Almost, you know, it's so natural for us to be uncomfortable with differences because, boy, finding your comfort zone in life, sometimes can be a challenge, especially when you're younger and trying to figure out who you are when you're impressionable.
Right. So. But the marvelous thing is that now that, you know, we are who we are, we have choices. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Is we have choices. We can choose to be the better person. We can choose to open our minds, to open ourselves to new experiences.
And we can change the world. We can change our world. We can change other people's world as we make better choices than what we've been taught.
Exactly.
On that note, let's hear another section of the story, because I have a feeling that that's exactly what's about to happen.
Okay.
And so she goes back, and the beast welcomes her in, and they eat dinner together, they have long conversations, they go walking, and every night the beast asks, "Will you marry me?" And she says, no, I just like you as a friend." And so Belle keeps on having dreams about a handsome prince. And he always asks, "Will you marry me?" But she said, no, I just like you as a friend. And so one day she says, please let me go see my family once more. And he says, "Fine, but only for a week. Have this ring and twist it 3 times when you want to come back. And have this mirror to see what is happening at the castle." So she went back, and at the last day, her sisters said, "I want to live in that beautiful castle." And so they were jealous of her. And so they did something really evil. They took onions and put them in their eyes and started to pretend to cry and said, please stay one more day." And so she did. And the next day she looked in the mirror and there was the beast almost dead from heartache. And so she started to cry, and she twisted the ring 3 times, and she appeared back at the castle, and she said, "Oh, I love you, I'm so sorry." And she was weeping, and she said, I will marry you, I love you. And a tear fell on the beast, and the beast turned into that handsome prince in her dreams. And he said, "Will you marry me?" And she says, yes. And so they got married and lived happily ever after. The end.
You know, my big question at this point is about people and their ability to change. And my question is, did the beast change just because of Belle's influence and their nice conversations in the garden? Or did he change because he actually fell in love with Belle? And love, which is, as we know, the greatest, most powerful force in the universe, did that transform him?
It's a good question. In the Disney version, you can see that when Belle first arrives to the castle, he's still bitter and selfish, and but you know, you see that change in him because he loves Belle. And which is nice to see. It's great.
Yeah. And he softens. I suppose that's realistic.
Yeah. And that, you know, people can change through the love of others. However, in the book that I read, the Beast was actually already who he was when Belle arrived at the castle. He was already humble. He was already tender-hearted. Granted, he understood that, you know, he had some challenges because of his beastiness, in a sense, mm-hmm. you know, appearance. And, you know, he knows people fear him, and so that is a bit of a challenge. But he already was good and kind and tender.
Now, originally, as a prince, he was arrogant and selfish. So what made him become kind and tender?
That's a good point. Yeah, he was very selfish. There could be a few things. First of all, I think sometimes our external situations will impact us greatly. So for in this instance, he was changed into a beast. That's pretty extreme. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
And I guess it's not unrealistic to assume that that might be a very humbling
yes.
situation. So, but you have a choice there, don't you? You could become bitter and angry and worse, or you could be humbled and become more tender.
That's so right.
There was a choice there.
That's right. And it's not... And I think it's safe to say that at a period of time when something bad happens that you don't want to have happen, that there was some bitterness. There was probably a little bit of grief and bitterness, and I'm like, but sure. Again, you accept it, you learn from that experience. So even then right there, there's a choice whether you choose to learn from your experiences, even though it's not the way that you expected or had planned.
So there's an ongoing choice. You may get bitter, go through the grieving process,
mm-hmm.
but there can be a natural evolution. And
possibly. Every instance is a choice. Even the bitterness is a choice and such. And
it may seem a natural reaction, but there are options, so that means it's a choice.
That's oh. right. That's right.
And so either way, whether he was changed by being forced to be humble or changed by this love for Belle, either way, there was a force that changed him. But I still find myself a little bit skeptical about when someone changes for someone else. How deep is that change, and is it permanent? Do you have any experience where someone you have known has changed you permanently?
Yes, I do. My grandfather is the first person that comes to mind. He is always approachable and is very kind. For example, when I did something wrong, I was afraid to approach my grandmother because she would get after me, which when I did something wrong, I deserved something like that. I didn't like to be afraid.
Yeah, who does?
Exactly.
So what did this teach you? How did that influence you and who you are?
I feel like because of his example, I wanted to be like that too.
Hmm.
I don't like becoming angry quickly. And eventually we did talk to her, and I noticed that she chose to work on it. And after that, I felt like I could approach her much, much easier.
That reminds me a little bit of a friend of mine. There's this one night that just one sentence changed my perspective a little bit. We were at a Christmas party, and I was going to school up in Logan. So it was bitter cold outside, and this friend and I were the last two to leave the party at our friend Ruth's, and I was going to give him a ride home. Well, it turns out I had a loose battery connection, and so my car wouldn't start, but we didn't know that at the time. So we decided we'd push start the car. Well, it had just snowed about an inch, and it was really slick snow. So we pushed this car two or three blocks before we finally hit a little salted, dry patch of road where we could get enough traction to jumpstart the car. And in the meantime, it just hurt your lungs to breathe this frigid, frigid sub-zero air. And at one point I said, man, this sucks. You know, I was feeling a little bit bad that, you know, my car wasn't working to give him a ride home. And then he said something that made me a little bit ashamed that I didn't think of it in the first place. He says, no way, man, this is great. And that example stuck with me of even when things are going bad, you can still have a good attitude and turn it into an adventure. But these are kind of examples of significant but surface traits. What do you think it takes to change someone's deep nature, and is that even possible?
Well, just to kind of correct, you know, if it's you wanting to change someone's deep nature, I mean, it's they actually who choose to change that deep nature. But
that's a good point, because if someone doesn't want to change, 99% they're not going to, are they?
Not going to. But there are definitely several, you know, deciding factors, of course. You know, sometimes it can be circumstantial, as far as, you know, say someone had an accident and they were seriously injured, whereas before they probably wasn't empathetic or sympathized with others who had severe injuries or struggles or challenges, where after that then they changed, is a lot more understanding.
You know, that is probably a good point, because I really, really, really want to believe that people can change, and maybe the things that change us are our trials.
Yeah.
We're forced to turn to the right or to the left.
That's right. We're put in uncomfortable situations where, you know, typically we don't want to put ourselves in uncomfortable situations, which causes us to stretch or to grow or even hurt or have pain. Mm-hmm. However,
and we all experience that. There's all kinds of, there's plenty of opportunities in life to have some pain and be forced into making choices and react one way or the other.
Right. However, there's a lot of good that comes through from these things. And, you know, these are experiences that help us to be a better person, or at least we have the opportunity to be the better person.
Yeah, because I was thinking there's also a lot of bad that comes from it. But they're shaping experiences, and we get to choose to some degree how we react.
Exactly. And so with the beast, and if you think about it, you know, he still had a choice. How am I going to react to this? In this case, he accepted, learned from it, and became the better person. Mm-hmm. And that's the person that Belle fell in love with, despite the appearances. And when you see people for who they really are, and you appreciate the good that you see.
And people are always, well, almost always, 95% of the time, I think, aren't they more beautiful inside than outside when you see who they really, really are?
Yes.
At least past their fears. And
I've known of some individuals who, you know, weren't so attractive on the outside, but they are amazing people on the inside. And to me, that shines brighter to me than...
And it can take time to see people clearly down there. It can take some of those walks in the gardens.
And it kind of, you kind of have to stretch yourself a little bit to put yourself out there to get to know them.
And it's so easy to write people off on our first impression.
Right.
And miss out on that.
And unfortunately, it may
be
it may be kind of a social culture thing, you know.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it is. It really is.
Like people meet you and say, I can't marry that person, and so they have no interest in you. For example, people who are so focused on that instead of connecting with quality people and being vulnerable and real.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe people would benefit if you find someone who you're not totally attracted to, think of them as the beast. And realize they probably have a beautiful core that you could discover.
Yes, you can. Yes, I agree. And I actually had a friend of mine did give someone a chance, and she was not expecting it at all, but she fell in love and got married to him, and she's very, very happy.
Living happily ever after.
That's right.
That's great.
And that's what happened to the beauty and the beast.
And Belle. My last question is, we were just talking a minute ago about formative experiences, and obviously negative, challenging experiences that push us out of our comfort zone, that's an opportunity to grow. We're kind of forced to grow.
Mm-hmm.
But can really positive experiences have an equal influence on us? Because I would much rather learn that way.
Yes, absolutely. Definitely, yes.
Positive. I'm glad to hear you say that, because frankly, I'm not sure, but I really take your word for it. I just need more experience with it.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, the first thing, I don't know, comes to mind is actually, in a sense, maybe a little cliche, but to count your blessings.
That's true, because changing your perspective definitely would have a deep impact on you.
Yes.
So in that case, you don't even need fabulous. You don't have to win the lottery, for example. Mm-hmm. You need attitude, and that's internal. You don't have to have great external things happen to you. So to wrap up today's podcast, here's my final takeaway from today's discussion. A lot of people talk about and wish for a fairy tale life. But when they say that, they tend to forget that half of the fairy tale is a very difficult trial that the protagonists have to go through. And that is part of why they're able to live happily ever after. And it's no different from us. So if we choose a good attitude and try to learn and become better people, then maybe everything will turn out great.
I agree. That's an awesome takeaway.
Thanks. And thanks for joining us, Laurie. It was really fun talking to you. And thanks all of you for listening in to the University of Life. Find more of our podcasts at uofoflife.com, and we'll see you next time.